The Wolf by Maureen Marsh.
Of all the icy blasts that blow on love, a request for money is the most chilling. As he stared Ellen's large, sad eyes, he realised the truth of this. Lucas, I will give you money again, but I don't believe the story about your brother in Thailand with a broken leg. He started to interject, but she put her hand up as if to silence him. I will give you some money, Lucas. Not what you've asked for, and it's the last time. I think we need to have space apart. And with that statement, she stood up from the cafe table and walked out onto a rain-drenched winter street. His last image of her was turning the corner into town. Of course, eventually you have to move on, disappear. But it was generally his choice, and a necessary one. She had jumped the gun, and a little of his bravado and belief shook like the winds in an oak tree, and a few dead leaves hit the ground. Away from this precarious game of love and take, he mostly lived in a kind of limbo, a flat line, where he felt very little of either good or bad. He merely pottered on quietly in the grey areas of life, seeking relief in porn, alcohol and gambling. He'd reluctantly taken a part-time job in an NHS canteen, having careered through the last few thousand pounds in his bank account, and finding himself in a desperate state, had spent a number of hours systematically going through his little black book, attempting to reconnect with old and generous flames. This had proved a less than profitable venture, when all but one had answered the phone, and the one that did had disconnected at the sound of his voice. A million bridges burnt and no way back. The NHS canteen was noisy and chaotic. The smell of coffee and rancid fat mingled with the shouts and laughter of ordinary folk with their ailments and problems, their families and friends. He viewed it all with contempt and vowed to move on as quickly as it took him to gain access to a new target's bank account. He had spotted her from a distance as she sipped her coffee in the NHS canteen. She was an eye consultant, Anne Rogers, a tired-looking middle-aged woman of middling height and appearance. He'd been listening in on her private conversations the last 2 weeks and had learnt that she was recently divorced, without children, and more than a little minted. On one occasion, he caught her sobbing on the shoulder of a colleague. She was perfect, his absolute favourite kind of target, plain, troubled, and like many intellectuals, a little stupid. Lucas, you have to keep the nozzle a bit higher if you want to get the froth. Monica, his manager, eyed his 10th attempt at a latte with something less than impressed, and he felt a momentary flash of fury as he envisaged sticking the red-hot nozzle in her eye. She tutted and came over to demonstrate. He could neither hear nor see her. He just imagined taking his hands and circling her podgy pink neck, squeezing until all life ceased. As this image came to him, he felt so immersed in the sheer ragefulness that he almost missed the new target coming up to the counter. "Can I have a hot chocolate, please?" she whispered. He spun around and projected a rictus grin, flashing his expensive white veneered smile. "You most certainly can. Would there be anything else I might assist you with?" She looked at his electric smile and gulped at the intensity of his visage and answer.
No, that's all," she responded.
He held her gaze for just a moment longer than was polite and went to make her drink.
"Lucas, you'll need the big jug for that, the big..."
"Oh, okay." He stared at Monica and the stare was so direct and murderous that she simply turned away and ambled into the kitchen. He took his time to make Anne, eye consultant's drink. He kept his gaze on her sad, pale face as she glanced a few times at her phone. He took the drink to her table and then took the opportunity to sit opposite her. "Your drink, madame," he said, with a confidence belying his lowly role. She looked a little shocked at his presumptive move.
Thanks. I hope you don't mind me sitting here for a moment. It's just, you know, you just really remind me of my sister. You have the same lovely complexion and intelligent smile. She laughed nervously. Oh, that's kind of you to say, but I probably need to make a move. You haven't started your drink. Oh, that's okay. It's a takeaway cup, so I'll take it away. He placed his hand on hers as if to stop her, and he caught a look of alarm across her features, so let go. Well, I hope to see you again, Anne, he said in as seductive voice as he could manage, and watched as she walked quickly out of the busy space. He felt an eruption of fury that his first move had failed so totally, and took himself to the toilet to recalibrate. He glanced in the mirror as he washed his hands and stopped with a sudden realization. He looked sweaty and flushed. There were grey streaks in his once vibrantly black hair, and horror of horror, a large bogey was making its escape out of his left nostril. Then another realization came. He was no longer fit for purpose. The purpose being to lie, to cheat, to steal. That was the purpose for a younger, prettier, more vibrant him. Somewhere along his well-trodden, cynical path, he had lost his edge, and he knew it, and he felt and looked tired. Walking slowly out of the gents, he gazed through the large, partially steamed-up windows of the insufferably noisy, sweaty canteen. He stared at Monica laughing with a customer as she made a cheese toastie. He looked at the plain and stupid faces of ordinary people, and he knew he couldn't go back in. And he knew he was never going to be anyone's Romeo again. Turning away, he walked into an unknown, an unknowable landscape.